The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to The Guardian Football Weekly. How are we meant to make high-octane podcasts when the third-place team almost certainly goes through? Wales won't care. They're in the last 16. A great achievement. Desperate for Ethan Ampadu, though. A red card rules him out of the next game. Did we learn anything today? Verratti is good. Chiesa is good. Italy's second string is better than Wales' one and a half string, but only just. But getting through was the aim for Wales, determination, hard work, and one great chance for Gareth Bale. Turkey, the darkest of horses, end up with no points, none. They even let Shaqiri score with his right foot as Switzerland almost certainly make it through. Barney Ronay will join us for a motivational chat about England. We'll look ahead to tomorrow's game and news of a goalkeeper scoring in the National League playoff. Plus your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Jamie Jackson in Amsterdam ahead of the Netherlands game. How are you?
Hi, Max. You okay?
Very good, thanks. Nicky Bandini, welcome.
Hey.
Joining us from Rome, Ben Fisher. Hey, Ben.
Hi, Max.
And a pod debut for Manon Stefan Ross, the author of Fee Ak Aaron Ramsey and Fee Ah Joe Allen. So I think most people will deduce a Wales fan from that. Hey, Manon.
Yeah, just a bit.
Ben, let's start with you. How was it in the stadium today?
Yeah, it was good. I suppose it was quite tough for Wales in the end, but ultimately they got what they want, and it wasn't a classic performance. And the other night we saw the best of them. We saw nowhere near that this evening, but they're through. And, you know, it shouldn't be sniffed at. Wales in the last 16 of the European Championship, two tournaments running, is hell of an achievement.
Yeah, that's true, Manon, isn't it? When the group came out, you must have thought this was going to be difficult. How do you feel now?
I think we played heroically with 10 men. I have to say, once Ampadu came off, I thought we have no hope of not conceding any more goals. So yeah, I'm very impressed with our defence.
What did you make of the red card, Manon? I thought it was harsh. I think I'm slightly biased.
It was harsh. It didn't feel like a red card to me, but I think by the book, it was a red card. So you have to concede it, I think.
Jamie, are you going to be cold-hearted and agree with that? He looked so sad, didn't he?
As I tweeted, actually, I think stamping has become a little bit virulent recently in our great game. It seems to be the go-to foul that players seem to think, yeah, well, I can put one on, you know, the opposition player and maybe get away with, yeah, yellow or not. So I don't really like it. It can hurt.
Brendan writes, do you think Ampadu heard the last pod, Max, and decided that you praising his diplomatic skills in the last game when he sort of pushed Ben Davis away and saved Ben Davis was an affront to his hard man persona? I do apologise if that what is what in Ethan's mind. And when Kiefer Moore came on, you saw Gareth Bale just yelling at him, I think, to just not make any challenges. That's what I could see.
Exactly. I just think we had to be so careful with the cards today because obviously we didn't know what was going on with Switzerland and Turkey either. So yeah, I think we were lucky. But as I say, the defence was so much better than I've seen for a good while.
8 changes for Italy, Nicky. Your second team is quite good.
Yeah, but I said this to you. Me and you were speaking earlier today, weren't we, Max?
We were.
On a different broadcast. Yeah, yeah, look, Mancini has hammered this point all tournament that he doesn't have starters. And as I've said to you before, I think you can possibly not take him at his word on that because the first two games he did keep a fairly settled team, but he has stressed this idea that Italy have a group of players that he trusts, and that point has been borne out through the qualifiers for this tournament, the qualifiers for the World Cup that have already started, and the Nations League games. He has used a really wide pool of players, and he has a lot of faith that a lot of those players are interchangeable. I still think some of what happened today was pretty remarkable. I mean, Pessina was quite a long way down. Pessina, who scored the goal, of course, quite a long way down the pecking order for midfielders before this tournament started. He only got into the squad because both Sensi and Pellegrini had to be withdrawn at the last minute. So that's still a pretty remarkable story. But again, he had played games under Mancini. He was someone who Mancini felt like he could slot into that team and not worry about suddenly not being able to win this game.
Ben, I'm conscious that, you know, you've got other duties and press conferences and Wales players to talk to. You look, you've watched all the Wales games. How impressed are you that they've made it through?
Yeah, well, it all kind of spun on that victory against Turkey. That was the one that's obviously got them over the line. I think, I don't want to sort of get ahead of myself, but, you know, they're going to face the runners-up of Group B, Russia, Denmark or Finland. And suddenly you're thinking, you would probably fancy them there. And then, believe it or not, it's then potentially a trip back to Baku, which I'm sure they would welcome with open arms. I know I would. So, you know, it's been a tough sort of slog, I suppose, this group. But actually, suddenly now it feels like it's opening up a little bit, dare I say.
Manon, have you been looking at the permutations and starting to think, hey, we could do what we did in 2016?
I think the ghost of 2016 is with us, you know, every step of the way. And of course, you know, we've got some of the same players that after last Wednesday's game, we were all looking at Gareth Bale and Aaron Ramsey and just praising them. And of course, this game, they perhaps didn't perform or they didn't take the chances when they were given. But yeah, I think I do look at it and just that dream is still alive, you know, after 2016.
How impressed with Robert Page have you been?
Oh, he's fantastic. I think he's just got such a good relationship with the team. And I'm always, when he makes substitutions, I'm always not sure that he's doing the right thing, but he clearly knows what he's doing, especially in this game, I feel.
Do you know what I'm jealous of, Manon? It's the relationship between the Wales fans and the Wales players. It's almost like you all hang out together. I know you don't, but I love the England team and I want to feel like I have that bond, but I don't think I have that bond. Is that a real thing? You know, when we have Ellis on the pod, Ellis James, he talks about that. And you know, Johnny Owen, who I talked to this morning, sort of feeling like you're all basically on one big bus together.
Yeah, it's definitely that. And it's such a privilege, really, because I've noticed recently that when I'm watching a match, is that I just think of them as the boys, you know, as if they were lads I went to school with or something. But there's a real bond. There's a real bond and a real relationship. And even when we don't do that well, I think we know our team. We know the strengths and the weaknesses, but we still support.
Ben, does that tally with what you see out in Rome?
Yeah, I think so. The camp is so sort of tight-knit. And close. And just to come back to Rob Page, I mean, I think he deserves immense credit, actually, for the way he's guided Wales, obviously, in tricky circumstances in Ryan Giggs' absence. And, you know, on the touchline today, you couldn't have had a sort of starker contrast between him and Roberto Mancini, sort of grey Armani suit, you know, just immaculate hair, sunglasses, the whole lot. And Rob Page, kind of black tracksuit, tattooed, just quite fierce. Mancini, at one point, actually, I think it was after about 20 minutes, just took the ball down in the dugout, just killed it with his right foot, just rolled back the years.
It was on his heel. It wasn't. That makes it sound like it was just a normal touch. He literally, it was like halfway to he wasn't leaving the ground, but it was a scorpion kick type movement. His foot was behind him. It was on his heel. It was amazing.
Yeah, and he killed it as well, which is, yeah, the fans certainly enjoyed it. And yeah, I think Page deserves credit for taking Wales on as he has. He sort of handled himself very well, I think.
Who of those Italian players? I mean, Verratti is obviously just a wonderful player. Chiesa, I know you've talked about a lot, you know, in the last sort of year or two. Do you see either of them getting into the Italy team for the next game?
Yeah, look, I mean, I know we had to start on Wales qualifying, but I think we need to sort of point out, by the way, that this was a record-breaking game for Italy. They've now gone 30 games unbeaten, which is matches a record they've had since the 1930s. So literally that last record was set in a very different time. The Second World War was going on for part of that record. And they've gone 11 games without conceding a goal now. They're the first team, I think, ever to win all of their games in Euros group stage without conceding a goal. I realise we've sort of already praised them for two games, but this was another step of something remarkable that's happening. In terms of the players, Verratti is... a lot of people who followed this team were looking at Locatelli's performance in the last game. They were looking at the fact that Verratti's been injured. They were going, oh, I don't know, Verratti, is he going to get his place back? And then he comes back and shows you he's not really injured. And you think, yeah, OK, he's got his place back. But what do you do now? What about Locatelli, who scored two goals in the second game and who was brilliant? So he's certainly going to create a dilemma for Mancini in the next game. And Chiesa is something slightly different. I think Berardi will still have that role on the right, but you see how different they are as players. I think Berardi does something very specific, and it kind of works when you've got him and Insigne on the two wings, because they're both basically inverted wingers. They both want to come inside. They both want to come onto their stronger foot. Chiesa, I think, maybe gives them some more width sometimes, but he certainly is more of a freelancer, I would say, than Berardi, more of a sort of free agent sometimes in the way that he operates on the pitch. And I think that just gives you two very different, very talented options that you can choose from.
Jamie, how impressed with Italy have you been this tournament?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to have to say it's actually tipped them to win it because...
Okay, well done.
Well, only because they're my go-to team because of the classic 82 match stroke tournament. So I always want them to do well. But yeah, no, I have been. It's interesting to see Mancini because I hadn't realised there might have been actually in a piece of Nicky wrote that he twice basically fell out as a player, you know, with sort of the then Italy head coach. And so he messed up his chances of sort of playing in major tournaments. Mm. And now here he is sort of, you know, I don't know about redressing the balance, but and I didn't realise it was quite as long as, you know, 30 games now. But very impressed. I mean, I don't know, there's this whole thing about are you peaking too early? But I suppose if you're on a peak that's a plateau that just continues for the next, you know, however long it is, two or three games, really impressed. There's just something about the Italians for me in a major tournament that I always want them to, you know, to do well. And it's interesting, they're a little bit, actually, I don't know if you'd agree, but they're a little bit like that 82 team from the Rossi game, the hat-trick, where they suddenly became, they almost played a little bit like Brazil, like, you know, when they beat that amazing Brazil team. And they seem to have, I was watching them today, I was thinking, crumbs, there's a lot of flair there, there's a lot of skill, there's a lot of sort of expansiveness. I don't know if I've got that right, it's just that I don't see them all the time. But from what I saw and what I have seen, it kind of almost look, I don't know really. I was trying to think back to Mancini City, which I obviously covered when they won the title. And I'm not too sure. I mean, he had like Tevez, he had Balotelli, he had a lot of attacking players in that side. So yeah, it's good. You know, it's really great to see. I obviously hope they go on kind of win it if England don't.
Is that a fair appraisal, Nikki?
Yeah, well, there's. I wrote about this in The Observer if people want to go and find it. But there's definitely sort of several threads that have gone into Italy playing this way. There's one which goes all the way back to 2010 when they left the World Cup at the group stage, and Arrigo Sacchi comes in as head of the youth system and right away sort of says, look, we need to stop focusing on results and start focusing on the player and create something more like what Spain are doing, which of course 2010, the context is different, but Spain were on top of the world. And so he really set about trying to create this focus on a more expansive football that has sort of sat with some of the younger players in this squad since they were under 15s, taking them all the way up to where they are now. But Serie A is currently the highest scoring league in Europe. And some of what Mancini is doing is just building off the likes of Roberto De Zerbi at Sassuolo. Raspadori came into this game, which means we've now had three Sassuolo players involved in his Italy team at the World Cup. There's only one fewer than Juventus. Sassuolo is a town of 40,000 people with this small, unlikely football club that's been thriving in the last few years. So the influence of club football is part of it. Mancini is part of it. Sacchi's history is part of it. I wanted to sort of add on to that, to pick up on what Ben and Manon were both saying about the Welsh team and the atmosphere in the group and that being some big part of the story. That's absolutely a big part of this Italy story as well. Very consciously, it's a part of this Italy story. It's actually why you have Mancini saying, I don't have starters here. That's not how this is going to work. And I thought one of the most telling little moments in this game, in the 89th minute, I think it was, he sends on his backup goalkeeper, Sirigu. And Sirigu is 34, so he might not have another tournament in him, we don't know. But Mancini, as you just alluded to, never played in a World Cup. He missed two because of situations between him and the managers. And in 1990, he went, but he didn't play. And he's always said that's his biggest regret. So, look, Sirigu has played in a World Cup before, actually, and a Euros. But still, I think that desire to include everybody, to make eight changes, to then bring in your goalkeeper even off the bench, that speaks to very much what the ethos of this team is and what Mancini's idea of what the national team should be doing is as well.
Not a bit of pity, keeper coming on in the last minute, or a beautiful thing. Ben and Manon, do you see any of those Wales players who came in today? I thought Nico Williams looked pretty good down the left. I mean, that is Ben Davis' position. I just wonder if you think any of those players that came in have a chance of starting. Ben, what do you reckon?
Oh, I'm not sure if they do, Max, to be brutally honest. I agree. I thought Williams did really well, actually. And I was surprised from the outset that he didn't start the tournament. He'd started the previous friendlies. And it was a bit of a surprise, actually, when Rob Page reverted back to a four at the back instead of that 3-4-3 we saw today. I think today was sort of further evidence that Ramsey is not a sort of false nine type player. I think he looks so much more at home as a 10. But again, as somebody just said, I think this is probably going to rank as one of the best defeats in Wales history. You know, it's the defeat that has got them through. And at the end, they all went to the corner to celebrate with the fans right up in the top tier of this stadium. And it's not a sense of, oh, it's a disappointing defeat with the red card and everything. It's the polar opposite.
What do you think, Manon? Anyone today that you'd bring in? I mean, because the team that beat Turkey, I couldn't praise them enough, actually. Like, I almost went through the entire team praising every player for what they did.
Yeah, I think they were so fantastic against Turkey. And yeah, as Ben was saying about Nico Williams, I just think he had his work cut out for him today. You know, he worked hard throughout the game. He was just absolutely fantastic. And I think we've just got a solid squad. I get nervous about putting the younger players on, just because, again, partly because of the ghost of 2016, I think that we get nervous about letting go of that. But yeah, I'm hopeful.
And Danny Ward as well is a player I literally did not know, and I should know until this tournament. You know, he'd been at Leicester, not played a Premier League game in 4 years, and even today, Manon, he looked so solid, didn't he?
He did, and confident. You know, he seems to be so confident and in control. And I think these last few games, you know, he's become one of the names that we really celebrate up with Bale and Ramsey and Alan. You know, the heroes of the Welsh squad. I think Danny Ward is one of those now.
Before we let you go, Ben, any good parking-based anecdotes? That what the people want from you out in Rome? It's a tricky place to park at the best of times, isn't it?
I've let other people do the dog work for me, Max, as it were. And you know, I've let the taxi drivers take the brunt of it. So it's out of my hands.
Have you had your race with Brian Flynn yet?
No, but somebody in this WhatsApp, as I'm speaking to you, has just said that we can do it in Baku for the quarters, as it were. So.
Okay,
maybe it's there.
If any neutrals weren't bothered about Wales getting through, now Wales need to get through for the 10-yard sprint between 27-year-old Ben Fisher and 67-year-old Brian Flynn. Ben, I'll let you go and do whatever you got to do.
Thanks a lot. Cheers,
no
guys.
No worries. Cheers, Ben. Bye, Fisher. Ben. There, out in Rome. And Manon, before we let you go as well, can you tell us about your books, please?
Yeah, sure. I write mainly through the medium of Welsh. And after 2016, I wrote a book, a children's novel called Fi a Jo Allen, which means Me and Jo Allen, about a family going out to the Euros in 2016. And then I wrote a book called Fi ac Aaron Ramsey, Me and Aaron Ramsey, again, for older children, about a trip to Euro 2020. But of course, that never happened. And I had to scrap the whole novel and start again. So I wrote another novel about Aaron Ramsey and just a family's relationship with that all-consuming tribal bonding that comes from supporting the Welsh football team.
Do you wish you were out there?
Oh, God, so much, so much. I didn't go in 2016 because it's a weird thing in Wales. So there are so many people like me who were had no interest at all in football before 2016. If you would have told me in 2015 that I would be speaking to you about this now, I would have laughed in your face. And the fact that, you know, so many of us jumped on that bandwagon and are still on that bandwagon and have enjoyed it ever since.
That's so great, because I think there is certainly there's a sort of feeling about being a football fan that, you know, you have to have been a football fan since you were four, and if you weren't, you don't count.
Yeah.
And we should encourage people to, you know, jump on bandwagons and stay with it. I think that's really interesting. Did you, were you sort of welcomed in? Has there been any kind of, I remember when Cambridge United started doing well and we started getting bigger crowds, all the people that went when we were shit would be like, I don't like it. It's busy. Who are these people? Were you totally welcomed into the environment?
There are a few comments, you know, but I think most of all, people just welcome it, especially because in the intervening years, the people who came to football in 2016 have tended to stay. So we haven't sort of gone away and then come back for 2021. It's an interest that has stayed with us. It's a passion that stayed with us. It's a lovely thing.
Most likely Russia or Finland, possibly Denmark, very small chance of Belgium. Who do you want?
I'd be happy. Russia, please.
Yeah. I quite like Kiefer Moore v. Juba on a pitch is a great thing to see, isn't it? Just two big men. Kiefer Moore bleeding from somewhere would be heaven.
Kiefer Moore's one of the other ones that has just sort of come in recently joined the tribe, and I think we're just still kind of getting to know him as a player, but his presence when he's on the pitch is just, he seems to be everywhere, and he seems to be everywhere that he's needed on the pitch.
Nikki, who's next for you, Austria or Ukraine? I mean, it sounds like a bye, doesn't it?
I don't know. I think Ukraine have got something about them under Shevchenko, and I know that if that game was the one it turned out to be, that the Italian press would be all over it, because Shevchenko is, of course, still an idol in Milan. So I think that would be quite a fun game for the Italian side of things, certainly.
All right. Well, that'll do for part one. Manon, thanks so much for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Manon Stefan Ross there, author, Wales fan, and we'll get Manon back on as Wales go through. In part two then, the game that none of you watched, which was Switzerland 3,
I did
Turkey
a little bit.
1. You did a little bit, Jamie, that's fine. But some great goals, we'll talk about them in a sec. Part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. All right then, Switzerland 3, Turkey 1. Switzerland 3rd then. They're on 4 points as well. Very much TBC who they'll play, because it gets very complicated. It depends on lots of other results. But they're almost certainly through, potentially Belgium or France. But, you know, don't take that as red. Maybe wait until the games have been played. Jamie, there were some brilliant goals in this game. You know, Seferovic's goal was brilliant. Shaqiri's first. I've never seen Shaqiri kick it with his right foot, let alone like that. I mean, wonderful goals in a sort of, in a slightly meaningless game. I mean, it did mean something, but...
The kind of goal you want to see at a major tournament, and which I always think are part of a major tournament's sort of tapestry. If you have them, they really add something. You know, I'll pull one out of there. There's one by Josimar in the 1986 World Cup for Brazil. You know, stuff like that. You know, Shaqiri's maybe not quite as dramatic as that, but that sort of distance and it just flew in. I was thinking about him as I was watching him particularly play, thinking he's an interesting footballer, because if I remember right, he was at Stoke, he's now at Liverpool, I think he was at Bayern, he might have been at an Italian team. You know, he's had an interesting... Yes, he's had a very interesting career, and here he is, you know, sort of producing the goods, to use that cliche, today. And, you know, he sort of, you know, he's got an interesting backstory. Who knows with Switzerland? I've got to be honest, I'm not a massive expert on Swiss football, but, you know, Granit Xhaka, let's move on to it very quickly. I was always a little bit interested that, he's captain of Switzerland. He seems to be still an Arsenal regular, because for me, he doesn't quite do it, but you know, he obviously well thought of, you know, for Switzerland, and I suppose in a tournament like this with his experience in the Premier League, he's obviously, you know, a very valuable player for them.
Richard Jolly's stat: only Cristiano Ronaldo, Romelu Lukaku, Ivan Perisic and Jerdan Shaqiri have scored in all of the 2014-2018 World Cups and Euro 2016 and Euro 2020. Turkey, meanwhile, their records in Euro 2020 and World Cup 2022 qualifying, 9 wins in 13 games, 28 scored, 8 conceded, wins over France and the Netherlands. In this tournament, Nikki, this was the best they played, actually. And it wasn't enough to get anything out of Switzerland. They've been tremendously disappointing.
Yeah, I think I've already started to eat this humble pie on the last edition of this podcast, but I had them as a dark horse. I think it seems like a lot of people did, so perhaps we're all just too busy chasing our own tails. But they took 4 points off France in qualifying. Like, this is a team that has had some really good results in the last year or two. So it's really hard for me to understand why they were quite so poor, but they were really, really poor. I do think there's a real contrast with that Swiss team in terms of just, it's hard not to look past the management, the difference between Senor Gunej and Petkovic in this, because Petkovic, I don't think you could argue that that Swiss team is working with the greatest resources in this group, and nobody ever has. But he's getting players like Shaqiri and like Zubra at left back, who I think got 3 assists in this game, to produce at the very best of what they can. And Petkovic has basically shown he can always get the Swiss. And of course, they aren't through yet, but he has generally always got them through to the knockout stages of major tournaments. Whereas Gunej, it feels like, had greater talent at his disposal and just didn't make the most of it at all. And players coming off really good seasons in some cases. I talked about this before the tournament, all these Lille players coming in off winning Ligue 1 and one goal to show for it, 3 goals conceded against Italy and Switzerland. It's, yeah, it's pretty underwhelming.
Oh, well, they're gone. Forget about them. We can crack on with tomorrow's games, North Macedonia, Netherlands, Ukraine, Austria. Netherlands already guaranteed top, Jamie. You're going? You're looking forward to it?
I am, yes. It's been an interesting week, 2 weeks from the build-up. I'm talking about the Netherlands here to the juncture we're at now, because Frank de Boer basically switched to a 3-5-2 kind of in the training camp. I mean, he may have played one or two games before in friendlies, etc. And every player, and de Boer himself, and this is before the first game, which was Ukraine, accepted that, yeah, we're not too sure about this system, we're working on it all the time in training. And he sort of looked, de Boer, obviously, Frank de Boer, not had a great recent club management record. And they've gone from this sort of, what are they going to do? There's a lot of skepticism here in the Netherlands, where I am, now obviously covering them, from critics, etc. But now suddenly, when Matthijs de Ligt came back in after injury for the last game, suddenly you looked at this team, you thought, you've got him, you've got Wijnaldum, you've got Frankie de Jong, you've got Memphis Depay, you've got Denzel Dumfries, who's the right wing back in this system, who's been man of the match in both of their games, scored in both of those games, and looked a heck of a player. He's captain of PSV, I think he's 25. I think he had a bit of a sort of difficult route to the top, if I can put it that way. So, sort of, he's got a very good character. And, I'm not going to say that they are one of the favourites, but, they're coming up on the, they probably lose 12-0 tomorrow after I've said all this. But no, they do look decent. And it's just been interesting to see how they sort of, or they are in the process of kind of coming together with this system and these players. And, Dumfries, who I didn't know much about at all, he looks a very, very good, very good player. They've got 4 or 5 sort of gun players, which are kind of every big team needs,
Ukraine, Austria, winner of that game gets second place. And plays Italy. A draw means both probably qualified. Then at 8 o'clock, we've got Finland, Belgium, Russia, Denmark. Belgium need just a point to finish top. A draw would suit Finland too, as they'd almost certainly be through. Denmark, and I think everyone would love Denmark to get through. They need a big win,
of course,
for any chance of qualifying. A point probably good enough for Russia. Finnegan says, in readiness for tomorrow's clash between Finland and Belgium, can we dig up one of my favourite ever moments I've watched live? 2007 in Helsinki, and the two nations met in a European qualifier. In what I'm assuming is a unique occurrence in international football, the match was delayed for approximately 7 minutes when a hukaja, or eagle owl, if you prefer, flew into the stadium, landed on the pitch and refused to leave. The Finns went on to win 2-0 and immediately opted the eagle owl as the national football mascot. Some knowledge. There is this dilemma. We've talked about it before, but the lack of jeopardy. Like today, it would have been so much more. If you knew that third wasn't getting through, the Swiss would have absolutely piled on, and the Welsh would have been desperate to get a point. They might have risked their playing their players that were on a yellow cards. We haven't worked a way how to change it. Weejum says top two from each group go through. That's 12 teams. The best four get a bye into the quarterfinals. The remaining eight play each other, and the winners go into the quarterfinals. More drama, fewer games. Is that? I think we've discussed something similar to that. But I
quite like that. It's a big advantage for the top four. Like it's some that would be worth playing for in a short tournament to miss a round when anything can happen, and also to get your legs freshened. I quite like it. I did think one thing that really sort of struck me in this game, because I think there's a real possibility that a team on 4 points might not get through this time. At the beginning, I was thinking if you get 4 points, you're probably going through. But when you look at the groups now, you think it's really possible that someone could get a four and not make it through. And I did think to myself, we play these last games of the group within the group at the same time for the reason of fairness, right? So that teams can't know each other's results. There's no advantage in playing earlier or later. But now, the way this is set up, there really is an advantage, in theory at least, if you're playing in the group that has the game last, because now you do get to say, okay, we might know we need to get third place this goal difference. So it does feel, on top of the fact that it's quite sort of diminishes some of the jeopardy, it feels unfair actually in this situation where you could end up with all those team on 4 points.
It's a mighty tough podcast, that one when everybody plays on the same day. Doesn't it? I don't know how many screens you need to watch all that. Sorry, Jamie, you were going to come in.
I'm really, really useless at this sort of thing. But what about 8 times 3? Would that, you know, the top two go in, would that mean every match would have something on it? Or would that reduce the number of matches or something? I suppose it would it? And then, I don't know, would that...
The 8 times 3 would be, you might have that problem, you know, the 82 problem where the last game, what you'd need is, and I don't know if we've discussed this on the pod, is A plays B, and whoever wins that then plays C, and then... That would mean there would be fewer opportunities for that. If we both draw, we're through type games.
Okay, yeah. Right, yeah.
Or 32 teams, right?
One thing I saw suggested tonight, which I haven't had enough time to think about, but which sounded okay off the top of my head, was that instead of going through to a knockout second round, you basically build in a second group stage where it's 3 team groups, and then only the first place team goes through from that group.
Yes, okay.
So because it's only first place through, there's no calculations at the end. And also, I think that makes the numbers work better. But I haven't had enough time to think about whether there's a reason why it's a terrible idea yet.
Okay, let's go with that. That's the one we pitched to UEFA. That'll do for part two. Barney Ronay will join us for part three, and he'll tell us not to panic about England. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Joining us, Barney Ronay. Hey, Barney.
Hey, Max. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. I've read your England articles. You've been to both England games, and you wrote one about the importance of not panicking. And I don't think I'm panicking, but I want to make about 7 changes for Tuesday's game. So sort of just basically tell us what you wrote, Barney.
Well, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Because they haven't been very good. There's no way around that. I mean, Croatia was good. That was a kind of high intensity game, although I suspect Croatia, an ageing team, were ripe for that. But I think we tend to forget that England are always, even when England are good, they're bad in tournaments. There's always this bit where everything's wrong. And, oh God, it's awful, it's terrible. You know, hang your head, send them home, bring them home now. And then all you need is one win. And like everything's kind of, fuck, am I with the best team in the world? You know, and that's what happened. I remember it was a 0-0 against Holland at Italia 90. And suddenly it was 66 all over again. So that can happen. You could see it as slowly building momentum. I think that would be the way to look at it. But there are some quite weird things going on. I mean, Southgate, I was thinking about today, he's used 4 fullbacks in 2 games. I mean, has anyone ever done that before deliberately at a tournament? Why would you use 4 different fullbacks in 2 games? I really want to ask him this. I might go to the online press conference just to say, why have you used 4 different fullbacks? I mean, it's just a really odd thing to do, however you look at it, because generally teams just play their best fullbacks on the way through a tournament, and that's the way it works, and you get combinations going.
Isn't that part of the problem, which is, there are lots of good players in the England squad, but compared to, say, Italy or, you know, the best teams, and even some of the, even like a team like Wales, if everybody
wrote down their starting 11, they could all be completely different. Like there's nobody who you would definitely, on form and ability. So people are saying Kane shouldn't play. I think he should, but some people would bring Calvert-Lewin in. Perhaps only John Stones is the, and not because he's brilliant, just because of where he plays, is the only person that you would definitely, pretty much would be in everyone's starting 11. And that, and Gareth Southgate must be like, this is difficult because I like Bellingham, Henderson, Rice and Phillips. I like all my fullbacks. I like all my wide men. I don't know what to do.
Yeah, it's kind of like he's sitting down with this little box of nice things, shuffling them around, enjoying himself. But like, I mean, I've said for a while, I think we really do overrate how good the England players are. That's not meant to be a criticism. They're good. They're a good, strong squad. But loads of these players don't play in the Champions League, whether that's just a glimpse of their team, how well their team's done this season. That's not the case in the really strong nations. And we had this situation where we're just trying to say that Calvin Phillips is the new N'Golo Kante after the Croatia game because he's a good player who had a good game. But like we put them on a bit of a difficult sort of pedestal.
I think that's inevitable in every country, though. I think sometimes there's like two things going on here, one of which I agree with you. Like there is an English tendency to look at players in England and assume they're better than everyone. But there's also then this counter tendency to assume that this doesn't happen in other countries. I mean, I did an interview with BBC Radio Wales before this game and it was put to me, yes, but Ramsey and Bale are individually better than any of the players in the Italy squad. And I thought, Ramsey was not even in the first team at Juventus, okay? So that's just not true. I think every country does this to some extent. Like they look at the players, and that's inevitable because of familiarity. Like when you see certain players much more than other players, you're going to think they're everything because you haven't been paying attention to the other countries.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that strikes me about England is it's sort of, you know, why isn't he picking Grealish? Whereas Jadon Sancho, you know, actually has a real body of work. You know, I mean, that's the bigger question, but he's barely featured in the tiniest conversation about it. What strikes me about Wales players that you mentioned there, like, I was thinking about it watching that game, is well, if you watch like Wales from the outside, Bale and Ramsey, I look at them and think, why don't they hate their star players? Why don't they ever undermine them or say that they're rubbish, spoiled? They seem to really like them and respect them and understand their worth and want them to feel good, which to me seems really weird. Like they should be saying, Bale's absolutely useless. He missed that chance. He's rubbish. He's pampered kind of prima donna. But they don't seem to do that. It's weird. I mean, yeah, what's wrong with them?
Should we be worried about Harry Kane, Barney?
Yeah, because he's scored like twice in 11 games now, which isn't very good. And also just doesn't seem to have a clearly defined role. I don't think... Gareth Southgate is not as detailed an attacking coach as he is in defence. I mean, everybody knows that. The whole four different fullbacks in two games because of very specific identified patterns he thinks they will. Compare that to what exactly is Harry Kane doing? Is he dropping deep? Is he playing up as an outright number nine? Nobody knows, and particularly not Harry Kane. The idea of just having a good attack, having good attacking players, seems to be pretty much the attacking plan. I think it would be quite good to see Dominic Calvert-Lewin play for a bit at least, just because he runs in a different way. He'll run behind, and you could have, say, Grealish and Foden playing behind him because he'll stretch the defence. You won't have to have these runners coming in from the side. And while Calvert-Lewin isn't at Kane's sort of level yet, it would just be interesting a different rhythm in the team. But this is England, and we just keep playing the best players because of things like loyalty and celebrity and things like that.
At Southgate, Gabriel Clark tweeting, Southgate's major vote of confidence for Harry Kane. He starts on Tuesday because, quote, he's our most important player. He's fundamental not only because of the goals he scores, but everything else he brings to the team, which on Friday night was virtually nothing. Because even when he came short, he didn't control it. You know, I've played that role quite a lot, coming deep and the ball bouncing off me and then being slow for the rest of the game. But I suppose the question is, England aren't going to win the tournament. Well, that's probably the end of the sentence, but they're not going to win the tournament unless Harry Kane is brilliant. Or do you think there is another way?
No, but no, they haven't tried another way. You know, that you'd have to invent something out of the ether. That this team in the entire period of Southgate's tenure if I can call it a tenure, 5 years, has been based around Harry Kane sort of kicking the ball into the net. It would be incredible for him to sort of rip that up now and try something else. Although, you know, Pep Guardiola would try something else, wouldn't he? Although he'd have also have had hundreds of training ground hours to try and perfect what he was going to do. So, no, he will stick with this because he has to see it through. And I think that's probably the right thing to do. Harry Kane does give you an edge in tight games. He's very good at taking penalties. He's very good at, you know, getting the right place. I'm sure it will work out okay. And we will probably forget that we had this conversation pretty quickly.
I have this thought in my head about the catastrophizing that's going on, because England drew one game against Scotland, having beaten the World Cup finalists in the previous game. Yes, they didn't play great. There wasn't very exciting football. But literally the last version of this tournament, Portugal drew all three of their opening games against, was it Iceland, Austria and Hungary. So it wasn't in a group of death, or at least, you know, as we perceived, I know Iceland had a great tournament, but, and they drew all of their games and then they won the whole tournament. And you could have had this exact conversation about, oh, well, maybe if Ronaldo comes alive and does everything. I think Ronaldo scored 3 goals and Nani also got 3. So it wasn't even really all about Ronaldo that they won the tournament. So I just think sometimes we get very lost in these sort of moments of assuming that just because one game they didn't win and the other game they weren't great, that in a tournament of maximum 7 games, you can't just go on a run, win a couple of games on penalties and still win the whole thing.
Probably because we've got airtime to fill, Nicky, and we've got to talk about something. Jamie, yeah. What do you think?
Yeah, interesting conversation. I mean, my observation of Kane watching the game on TV here in Amsterdam was he didn't seem to get any service. He might have had one chance, I don't know. I thought, for me, the problem, or a problem, or the problem of this game, maybe not overall, is what was the fact that they just didn't create enough. There wasn't. And Phillips is an interesting player for me, because watching him, I was thinking, he never makes a tackle. He sort of, you know, I know you can take the ball off someone's toes, and it's not all about, but he didn't seem to ever do the Kante thing of actually dispossessing. He would run with the player with the ball and track back, to, you know, players who didn't have the ball, but I didn't actually see him do that much. And so, I don't know, maybe this is a bit rudimentary, but I would have liked to have seen him, for example, taken off and bring on Jadon Sancho. But was he even a sub this time, Sancho? I mean, I just don't understand this about Sancho. What has he done wrong? As Barney just said then, he, you know, to use a cliche, he kind of tears up the Bundesliga for Dortmund. You know, he gets assists, he scores. You know, he's one of the star players in that league. Kane, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I just think it's a little bit unfair. But I suppose this is part of the fun of the tournament, of you know, having a team that you follow, that you get overall a little bit about them. But, you know, I think Nicky makes the right point. It's 4 points. They're going to qualify, and then the real fun will start with whoever they play in the knockouts. That's usually when we meet some kind of, we are saying England here, you know, some sort of iffy or hilarious end. And I always like that.
Oh, God, I can't bear it.
You know what I mean? Some pantomime stuff coming down the track. And that, I've got to say, I enjoy that moment.
Lars Siverton made an interesting point about our centre midfielders, which is of the 4 of them, Rice, Phillips, Henderson and Bellingham, actually Henderson is the one who passes the ball forward the most. He's the one that actually progresses the ball up the pitch, and Bellingham is the only one who dribbles past players. So you've got your 2 players, and Phillips did sort of run in advanced areas. That's how we got the goal against Croatia. But it would be good to see one of those 2, I think, on Tuesday, Barney.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I would stick up for Phillips a bit, but against Croatia, he actually really did make tackles. You could really see it in the stadium that he's got this brilliant... I mean, he was really good against Croatia. He's got this way of getting his body across, and he just bounced players out of the way 3 or 4 times in the first 15 minutes, which I thought was really important to the game. And he is clearly a really good player, but still developing. I think the player who gets away with it a bit is Declan Rice. The person who talks about Declan Rice surging up the pitch with the ball is Declan Rice himself. I've heard him talk about his ability to do this several times, but I don't really see it happening. He's done something for West Ham a few times. He hangs around in good areas, and he's an impressive athlete and stuff. But I think he has contributed very little in this tournament. And if I were to remove a central midfielder, it would be him. Because for all his talent, He's not grabbing the game by the neck or the, what are you meant to grab things by? The shoulder, the scruff.
Scruff of the neck. Yeah, you can't go straight to the neck if you're quite violent, Barney.
Yeah, no, you shouldn't grab the name. That's a straight red, isn't it? Grabbing the game by the neck.
I think it is. Anyway, look, we're bound to talk about England a bit more tomorrow, and we will talk about them a lot on Tuesday, and then whatever happens, you know, the iconic image of the Euros will be what will be, you know, a crying Harry Kane being embraced by Jan Vertonghen as we go out in 90 minutes against Belgium. Anyway, Manuel says, how many times will the commentator say checkmate in the England game on Tuesday? Producer Sammy said, I heard it once during the Czech Republic-Scotland, so you mark your card for that. Paul says, was Hartlepool-Torquay the best game of Euro 2020? Yeah, I don't know if any of you saw this. In the 95th minute, so 5 minutes injury time, the Torquay goalkeeper, Lucas Kovalan, headed an equaliser. It's absolutely amazing scene. He went on to save Hartlepool's first two penalties, but Torquay missed their first two penalties, one a John Terry slip and one their captain hitting the bar. So Hartlepool go up. Congratulations to Jeff Stelling. Strawman emails, footballweekly@theguardian.com. Not a question, just a moment of zen, if you please. I joined my dad today for a pickup game for Father's Day in the US. Neither of us are particularly good. I slotted in at centre-back, as is tradition. He's in goal. It was all well and good, if exhausting, until I found myself the last line of defence before the corridor of uncertainty. The winger put in a low cross, which felt like Gerson's, but was probably not quite so convincing. I couldn't sort my feet out right, no left. A lovely cushioned finish by yours truly past the despairing fingers of my old man in goal. Proud to contribute one of, I assume, many own goals scored during the Euros around the world. Thanks for the pod as ever. That was from Emmett or Strawman. We'll be back tomorrow with those four games. We'll chat to you then. Until then, Jamie, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nikki.
Thanks.
Cheers, Barney.
Cheers.
We'll be back tomorrow.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.